From the Central Adelaide Local Health Network, this is Research Pulse, where we discuss the latest world-class health research from Carlin and how it's contributing to world-class care.
Most people know that a nutrient-dense diet of whole foods can improve your health in countless ways. But if you live with ulcerative colitis, a form of inflammatory bowel disease, which can cause painful inflammation in your digestive system, this maxim isn't so straightforward. G'day, I'm Drew Radford, and the good news is there's an Adelaide research team that's working to change that. Helping drive this is Dr. Alice Day, a postdoctoral researcher with the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Translational Research Group at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and Basil Hetzel Institute in Adelaide. Dr. Day is helping determine exactly what type of diet is best for people with IBD. To find out what's involved, she joins us for this Research Pulse podcast. Alice, thanks for your time.
Thank you for inviting me to talk today.
Alice, I just want to take a step back. You're a dietitian, I guess technically by trade. What drew you to that line of research?
I've always been interested in food and how food affects our body, and I certainly come from a background of a family that enjoys food and cooking, and this is certainly what drew me into this line of work. I was looking for a career where it was in health, but it was in an area that I guess people were interested in, and we all love to eat, we all love food, and so this is where I am.
That's a good description because it can have such a bearing on our well-being.
It definitely can, and certainly we here in clinic time and time again when we see patients, people always want to know what they can eat to try and improve their health, or if they're unwell, how they can use food to try and help treat their disease.
We hear the term IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, quite a bit, but it's made up of a couple of different things, isn't it?
It is. So inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD, is really an umbrella term for two inflammatory diseases of the intestines or the gastrointestinal tract. So we have Crohn's disease, which can affect anywhere between your mouth right down to the very tail end, or we have ulcerative colitis, which is largely confined to the large bowel, so the colon and the rectum. And these diseases, unfortunately, are lifelong diseases. There isn't a cure for either of them. And they're what we call relapsing and remitting in nature, which means that people that live with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, they will go through times when they're well, and they'll go through times where the inflammation flares up and gives them what can be quite debilitating symptoms, including abdominal pain, altered bowel habits, so diarrhea, constipation, bleeding from the tail end, you know, and debilitating fatigue.
We're not just talking about a few people, though. This can affect quite a number of people, can't it?
That's correct. The current data we have shows that one in 250 Australians are currently living with inflammatory bowel disease, and that number is actually on the rise. It's projected that by 2030, one in 200 Australians will be living with either Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. And one of the key issues with this disease and what makes it so debilitating is that it's largely invisible, because the symptoms that people live with, the pain, the urgency to go to the toilet, you know, maybe having to use their bowels 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 times a day, people can't see this. And so people that live with these symptoms every day are often not disclosing the discomfort and the impact that having this disease has on their quality of life, because on the outside, they look like just part of the normal general public. But actually, you know, they're spending a lot of time worrying about what to eat, eating and getting pain, getting on and off the toilet. And this can affect them both day and night.
I imagine that has mental health impacts as well.
It does have mental health impacts. So we see increased levels of anxiety and depression in people that live with inflammatory bowel disease. And this can either be long-term mental health that this patient group will struggle with, or it can also be reactional to their symptoms, depending on if their disease has flared up or if it's controlled again. But one thing that patients do tell us is always living with this uncertainty of not knowing when their disease may flare up, and also the uncertainty of not knowing what they shouldn't or shouldn't eat because this might cause symptoms to occur.
Alice, it's a debilitating disease, to say the least. So how's it treated?
So historically, people with inflammatory bowel disease have been told that diet doesn't affect their disease. So inflammatory bowel diseases have been thought to be autoimmune conditions, but we hear patients say time and time again that what they eat affects their inflammation. So inflammatory bowel diseases are largely treated with immunological therapies and medications. So there are a wide range of different oral and intravenous medications that people living with IBD can use to try and help control their inflammation. But these therapies are largely inadequate. So what we see is that over time, therapies work for a while and then the treatment effect can wear off. We also see that some people can't tolerate these therapies. So they may find they have a reaction to it or they have some side effects that are unpleasant or impact on their health. And so this really has created the need to develop alternative therapies to try and treat these diseases. And patients tell us that diet affects inflammation, and we're now starting to see, I guess, the emergence and increase in looking at how diet can be used as a treatment or in addition to their pharmacological therapies.
You said there that people mention, look, diet does help me on occasion. So you're really focusing on trying to narrow that down. How does the lack of knowledge affect people who are diagnosed with this debilitating condition?
Well, firstly, people don't know what to eat. So there's a lot of information on the internet about foods that may or may not be helpful to treat inflammation. But what we see is that the internet is littered with dietary information that hasn't been scientifically tested. And what we also know is that people with inflammatory bowel disease can, when they make dietary changes, have some improvement in their symptoms, but that doesn't necessarily mean that their underlying inflammation is being controlled. And what this leads to is quite a wide array of different information on the internet about what may or may not help for some people and what may or may not help for others. And people are confused. People want more information. So dietary research internationally has been voted by patients and consumers and health professionals as the third highest international research priority for inflammatory bowel disease, because people really see that diet does actually make a difference to disease control. But we don't yet know exactly what parts of diet or combinations of food or dietary strategies it is that works. And we now understand that the dietary treatment for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis is different.
Alice, can you explain then how your research is trying to uncover a successful treatment using diet therapy to treat the inflammation?
So our research program looks at manipulation of the gut microbes as a novel treatment paradigm for inflammatory bowel disease. So evolving data suggests that the gut microbes, of which diet is the key fertilizer for, may have a critical role in driving the inflammatory process. So as part of our research program, which has two arms to it, we have the diet as therapy arm, and we also have the fecal microbiota transplantation arm. We're looking at different strategies to change the bacteria in the gut to see whether it can influence the relapsing and remitting patterns of inflammation.
Exciting work, because at the end of the day, you're impacting on people's lives. So how are your early findings impacting clinical care and patients' lives?
So in 2018, in collaboration with Monash University, we ran a pilot study that first tested the tolerability and feasibility of using a diet as therapy for ulcerative colitis. So different to a medication, you know, for a diet therapy to work, we need to first know that the diet's enjoyable, that people can cook, shop and prepare it every day in their households with families and busy lifestyles. So this first study that we ran was really looking to see whether the diet that had been designed could actually be practically applied and followed by people. And we got excellent results. We enrolled 28 people with active ulcerative colitis into the trial, and we had people follow this diet for 8 weeks. We had excellent feedback on the diet being enjoyable, easy to follow, cook, shop and prepare for. And then as secondary outcomes, we also looked for signals to see whether the diet could influence inflammation. And what we saw is that about half of our participants had improvement in their inflammatory markers, so things like fecal calprotectin, which is a stool inflammatory marker. We also took tissue biopsies and had a look through flexible sigmoidoscopy or colonoscopy to see whether the inflammation looked like it had improved, and we saw really promising signs. We also looked at different fermentation metabolites in the stool of people that followed the diet, and we saw that the dietary strategy largely achieved what we were hypothesizing or intending to achieve. And so pleasingly, we've now been able to move on now to test this diet in a high quality randomized control trial to actually look at the therapeutic effect of whether we can use it as a therapy for people with ulcerative colitis.
You're at an exciting point. So what's your next steps with your research?
So the next steps ahead for us, we're currently halfway through recruiting 52 participants with active ulcerative colitis to this diet as therapy trial. And what this involves is participants are randomised to one of two diets. We're halfway through recruitment now, getting excellent feedback on the trial. We're not doing an interim analysis to be able to share the results, but we anticipate that by the end of 2024, we will be able to look at all the data and be able to determine whether this diet that has been developed can be used in clinical practice as a therapy or what we would call an adjuvant therapy, so adding it on to people that are on medications to get better disease control.
Lastly, Alice, is there a key takeaway for clinicians from your work?
I think the key message really is that diet is an integral part of healthcare. We have heard the patient voice that tells us that diet is important and affects gastrointestinal disease, and therefore doing dietary research in these areas is extremely important to patients, but also to bridge the therapeutic gap where we can see that current pharmacological therapies just aren't working to get adequate disease control. So please, if you know people with ulcerative colitis that are not getting good control of their disease, think about the microbial manipulation program that we have at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, where we're testing different diet and FMT therapies to try and help these patients get a better quality of life and have their inflammation under control.
Well, Alice, you're working in a remarkable space in terms of improving quality of life for a whole range of people. For now, though, Dr. Alice Day, thank you for taking the time and giving us insight to this important research and joining us for this Research Pulse podcast.
Thank you, Drew, for having me today.
Thank you for listening to Research Pulse. For more episodes in this series, find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear your feedback, so please leave a comment or rating and share this series with your colleagues and friends. If you'd like to contact us, you can find an email address in this episode description. This podcast was developed by the Central Adelaide Local Health Network. We would like to acknowledge the Kaurna people and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge their spiritual connection to the land on which this podcast is recorded. As part of the oldest living culture in the world, we draw inspiration from their deep knowledge of traditional foods, medicine and remedies.